tonight on Arena. It's Movie Review Night with Russell Crowe in Nuremberg, Edgar Wright's remake of The Running Man, and new horror Keeper, and Park Avenue with Fiona Shaw. +51 551 to text us, arena at rte.ie. You'll find us on Instagram at rte_arena. And welcome to Thursday night's slightly shorter than usual Arena. We'll be back to live commentary at 7.30 for tonight's World Cup qualifier between the Republic of Ireland and Portugal at the Aviva Stadium. But until then, for the next half hour, time to take a seat as we make our regular trip to the movies for all of this week's releases. First up, we have The Running Man, not a re-release of the 1987 Arnold Schwarzenegger dystopian action thriller, but a new adaptation of the original 1982 novel by Stephen King, directed by Edgar Wright and starring Glenn Powell. In Nuremberg, James Vanderbilt's historical drama about the 1945 Nazi trials, Russell Crowe is Hitler's second-in-command, Hermann Göring. The film dramatises the real-life mind games between Göring and American psychiatrist Douglas Kelly, played by Rami Malek, in the days leading up to the trials. In a new dramedy, Park Avenue, Irish actor Fiona Shaw stars as an elegant, wealthy widow in upmarket New York. Out of the blue, her grown-up daughter, played by Catherine Waterston, appears. She's left her controlling husband, and then nothing short of a full-blown mother-daughter relationship crisis results. And finally, in new horror movie Keeper by Osgood Perkins, lovebirds Liz and Malcolm escape to a secluded, romantic getaway cabin. But when Malcolm is called away, doesn't that always happen? Liz stays behind and finds herself at the mercy of evil forces. Serena Bellissimo and Paul Whittington join me. We will start with The Running Man. Paul, for those people who maybe haven't seen yet or possibly like me struggle to remember the original 1987 movie because it's been a long time. Tell us where we are.
This film is based, like practically everything, on an idea by Stephen King in a 1982 novel, and there was an R&E film in 1987, and it actually departed from the idea of the novel quite significantly to suit the times, and the film was what it was. This actually, for better or worse, is a good deal more faithful to the original book, and Glenn Powell, who everybody loves at the moment, is Ben Richards, and he's a man at the end, a blue collar worker at the end of his tether.
Serena, do you think that this film is more a film of the times, of the 2025?
I think so. It's actually quite scary sometimes watching this going, I know a lot of this is make believe, but sometimes I feel like I'm watching, it's almost like watching an episode of Black Mirror, going, this could be an alternative universe if we're not careful.
And I think that's what's interesting, isn't it? Because in 1987, it all seemed very futuristic, but yeah, it sort of doesn't now. And I'm not sure they knew quite what to do with that, but it doesn't seem a stretch, does it?
Well, is it? It's in modern day, isn't it? Because in 1987, the film was set in 2017, yeah, which is hilarious.
I don't think they mention a date in this.
No, they don't. But do you think it's set in modern day? Because it feels like modern day.
What I gathered was that it was sort of, you know, proximate, slightly in the future, yeah, so that they didn't have to mention things Trumpy.
Probably.
And that was almost a problem for the film. But yes, it is. I mean, there's nothing that couldn't be happening that happens, basically.
Except the fact that, like, in this, he's in a game show and basically he has to survive 30 days. If he survives 30 days, he wins the jackpot. But when, you know, like when you watch Traitors, someone gets killed off. They're not killed off. Yeah. They're allowed to go off. Whereas in this,
Traitors with guns and running.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're watching it live to air. And, yeah, you know, it's commenting on what society has become as well, where all of a sudden, I don't think they realise how much they're actually cheering for these people to be murdered. And yes, they're watching live on TV.
And there's also, Paul, unsurprisingly, an element of manipulation behind the scenes by the people making the programme as well.
Yes, there is. Josh Brolin, who I think he's a great actor, but we don't see him enough in this. He chews the scenery a bit when he appears, and they are manipulating it, and it's obviously a rigged game. They want people to survive a long time if their trajectory is interesting, but what they do not want them to do is win, for various reasons. There's $1 billion to pay out if they do. As Serena says, if you make a mistake, you are killed in variously horrible ways by these nasty people who are following you. But there is an underclass as well. In the actual America of now, the underclass behave like turkeys voting for Christmas. But in this film, they do not, because they gather at big screens in the slums to watch, and they're cheering for Ben Richards, for Glenn Powell's character, as they begin to realize he might have a chance of winning.
I have a couple of questions for you, Serena, about Glenn Powell's performance. What is he like in this? And as I understand it, he's been getting some advice from Tom Cruise, who, that makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, because they starred together in Top Gun Maverick, and he's been getting mixed reviews. Some people think he's not right for the role. I think he's perfect for the role. This is a blockbuster type. I know it's supposed to be deeper than that, but basically what we're just seeing is a blockbuster, and Hollywood's setting Glenn Powell up to be the next Tom Cruise. And I love, apparently he said, you know, I called Tom and I thought it'd be a 10-minute conversation. What do I do? 2 hours later, Tom had dissected everything with him. And the best piece of advice he gave him was film yourself running, because you think you look great and then you watch the tape and you're not fantastic. That's how you perfect
your run. That's where
I went
wrong.
Yes, we should have been watching ourselves.
Yeah, should have been. Yeah, I mean, I actually think that he definitely has the capacity to be an action. I mean, it's a step, it's a sideways step from, because I think he's a good actor, actually. And I actually think he's a good comic actor as well. He's not funny in this, but that's not his fault. It's the script. I think the satire in this film is rather clumsy, actually. And I think for the reasons we suggested earlier on, that I suggested earlier on, is that, you know, what to do with Trumpiness, and, you know, do we mention, do we not? And they decide to sidestep it, I think, for good reasons, because they're being faithful to the story, which they are largely faithful to. But I think that the satire, when it comes, is very clumsy. Like, there's this really sort of, like, the Kardashians are self-satirizing and do not need to be satirized, but they try and do that. They don't really make
the Americanos.
They don't really make much of an attempt with that. So that side of it is a bit flabby, I think.
Okay, how many stars?
2.5.
Okay, 2.5. Serena, what's your thoughts on it? And give me some stories.
I'll probably give this 3 stars. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. It needed to be 90 minutes rather than 2 hours and 10. And there's a gratuitous topless scene of Glenn Powell running around in a tiny white little towel that doesn't suit him, trying to scale some buildings as well. That tells you all you need to know about this film.
Yeah, and a burning rat also.
The Glenn Powell thing might be a sales point for some people.
True. Yes. And there's some great guest appearances as well.
There are.
Some cameos. Like, we've got Michael Cera, Sean Hayes, Colman Domingo, I thought was great in this.
Yeah, he's funny. He plays the sort of the cheesy game show host. Yeah. Actually, he is quite a lot of fun in it. Yeah.
People would know him as Mr. Milchick from Severance.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Nuremberg. It is James Vanderbilt's historical drama. This is a sharp right-hand turn. Hermann Göring, Hitler's right-hand man, was one of almost 200 defendants who faced charges for war crimes at tribunals, which took place in Nuremberg at the end of World War II. Serena, set the scene in this Nuremberg for us.
This is really interesting. It's basically the Nazis have just been arrested. They've been brought to Nuremberg, and it's up to Rami Malek's character, Dr. Douglas Kelly, who's a psychiatrist, to try and figure out what makes these men evil. At the same time that this is happening, we're actually seeing the creation of the International Criminal Court, and the lawyer in this is played by Michael Shannon. Again, this is another one that has had mixed reviews, but I have to say, you know, I'm not a fan of anything that's over 2 hours. This went for 2 hours and 26 minutes.
It is entertaining, isn't it?
I was gripped. It wasn't even just entertaining. I was gripped. Now, look, I have to put my hand up and say I'm not a history buff. I know what happened in World War II, but not to the extent of this.
I think that's where this film will work, actually, to be honest with you. Because there's a very, very famous film starring Spencer Tracy called Judgment in Nuremberg, which did the same thing with less famous Nazis, basically, because these were the first trials. And it's a superior film to this for various reasons. And I think also this film is slightly unlucky to come quite quickly behind Zone of Interest, because there are lots of Holocaust films, and Zone of Interest is sort of this brilliant open, like, the imagination involved in making you think about it without showing it. This is a very sort of, it's almost a procedural kind of film, isn't it, scene to scene, but it is entertaining. Yeah.
Okay, let's take something from the film. This is the scene in which Hermann Göring, played by Russell Crowe, listens to the charges that he's facing as he stands at the Nuremberg trials.
Hermann Göring?
I am Reichsmarschall Hermann Göring.
Hermann Wilhelm Göring, you are hereby charged by the United States of America, the French Republic, United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics on the following 4 counts. Crimes against peace, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and of a common plan or conspiracy to commit those crimes. The crimes against humanity you're accused of include murder, extermination, enslavement, deportation, and other inhumane acts. This is a copy of your indictment. Do you have any questions?
Nine.
Good day. Who's next?
Stryker.
Paul, for many reasons, I like Russell Crowe very much. Yes. I have seen him in the trailer to this. My great fear was that you would not be able to get over Russell Crowe playing a German war criminal.
Yeah.
But you think that's been done really
well. No, and I see why you would, because you listen to his German accent and so on. But actually, it worked. There's a couple of reasons why it works. It is true that Hermann Göring, he surrendered himself and asked the GIs to carry his bags. Like, he was very grandiose. Narcissistic type of person. So you see him first, and then he's speaking German to begin with. And he's pretending that he doesn't speak English because he's using the interpreter as time for his answers. So he's being clever. But then he does speak English. So you accept then the German accent, and you accept that Russ is, in fact, Hermann Göring. And he does have the charisma to persuade you of this. And I didn't find it was a problem after all. I thought he was quite good, actually.
Serena, what about the relationship between Russell Crowe's Göring and Rami Malek's character?
I found that really interesting, because it wasn't just about, you know, one using the other. I thought it went a bit deeper. There was the complexities of, you know, what happens when someone who is, there's no doubt about it, he is evil, but what happens when you get to know him on a personal level and you start to...
Charming person.
And you start to connect with him and you start to connect with his family. I found that just as interesting as their relationship. And I don't understand. Is it just me, Paul? I'd love to know what you think of Rami Malek's performance, because a lot of people are saying he's the weakest link, and I didn't think he was that bad.
Well, I thought that I think Rami Malek's very good. I thought he was too interesting. I thought he was miscast, in the sense that when he should be sitting back listening, he was too interesting. So I can see why people would think he was slightly miscast. I actually wanted to see more of Michael Shannon, to be honest, and I thought they rushed the courtroom scenes. But I know, I think that the scenes between the two of them, between Rami Malek and Russell Crowe, are interesting, and Rami Malek's character's trying to get something out of it as well, because he's trying to write a book about him, which he did.
Okay, let's hear what that sounds like then. This is Göring, played by Russell Crowe, and psychiatrist Douglas Kelly, played by Rami Malek, talking about the Führer.
Let's talk about Hitler. It's interesting you have not asked me this directly before.
I'm curious what the attraction was. He was a failed painter, not a very good soldier, yet was worshipped and revered.
He made us feel German again.
How?
First of all, I had seen Germany crushed. And along comes a man who says, we can reclaim our former glory. Would you not follow a man like this?
Depends what else he wanted to do.
The first time I saw Hitler talk, it was 1922, upstairs of a coffee shop for maybe 30 people. This was peacetime, but it was a peace without food, jobs, shoes. And he stood up and he said, French bellies are being filled with German pain. And then, if you make threats, you need bayonets. Rearm, down with Versailles. So that night, I became a National Socialist.
Serena, I understand that the film features some real-life archival footage from the Nazi concentration camps as well. What was your feeling about that being used in the film?
I think it was really important that they used that, because it's what actually happened. It's I think it makes you connect with what's happening in the most gut-wrenching way possible. Like, I couldn't watch what was on screen, but I think it's really important that we see what is on screen, and we don't try and reenact that either.
They showed what was shown at the trial to some extent, although much other stuff, worse stuff was shown at the trial. And it's interesting, because I actually think that there was not perhaps the requisite level of shock in the courtroom because this stuff was being seen for the first time and it never fails to horrify. Mm. But the point that Rami Malek's character arrives at is the old Hannah Arendt idea of the banality of evil. He said, you know, what's the difference between us and the Nazis? Nothing.
In terms of the trial itself, that's convincingly recreated in places?
Yeah, I thought it was. And Richard Grant plays this kind of, he's a real, they're all real characters, but an English lawyer, a judge and politician who likes a touch of schnapps in his coffee in the mornings, and he has a crucial scene. Yeah, I think it was good. There wasn't enough of it, because actually the all that courtroom stuff, as Serena said earlier, was all being done for the first time. There had been no international war crimes trials before, so this was make or break. And I don't think they gave us enough of that.
It was great, though, how sometimes they would go to... you'd be watching what was happening, and I think to sort of take us out of it and make sure we were really involved, they would change up what you were watching, so to go to some, like a very quick snippet of a black and white image. And I just think it was really cleverly done. And I think this is why the 2.5 hours went so quickly. But I have to say, someone no one's talking about is Leo Woodall, who plays the translator.
Oh, yeah, he's very good at it.
He's my standout because he's supposed to be in the background. His performance could have been...
Well, he's sort of us in it, isn't he?
You know, someone else would have played it as a background character. Yeah. But this one here, and he is. He gives a very quiet performance, but it's so powerful. Mm. And at the end, I was crying with him and for so many reasons. But I think this showed Leo Woodall's not just the pretty boy that everyone thinks he is. Mm. He is an actor who's going to go far.
Okay, how many stars are we talking about?
I'm giving this a 5.
I'm giving it 3 because I think that it was too procedural for me, but it's really entertaining.
Okay, that is Nuremberg. Now, again, another swift turn to the swanky surrounds of Park Avenue in Midtown Manhattan. It is a glossy backdrop, but mother-daughter relationships are no less messy in the classiest of locations. Serena, I was going to say, where are we in Park Avenue? But that's not really the question. Where are we in the film?
So we're in New York City in Park Avenue. And Fiona Shaw, her husband has passed. She's living in this swanky apartment. Her daughter has come home to visit. She's not sure why her daughter has come, but basically she's left her her controlling husband. They had this isolating life, living like on the ranch and stuff. She comes to her mother's place and they both have secrets. They both don't have a great relationship. They're trying to figure out what their relationship is, but they're not the only ones that have secrets. Even the ladies living in the apartment complex have secrets. But I have to say, this is probably one of the most beautiful, bittersweet movies I've seen in a long time.
Okay, we'll take a moment from it here. This is Charlotte, played by Catherine Waterston. She's left her rancher husband and she is planning to stay for a while anyway with her mother, Kit, played by Fiona Shaw. Charlotte soon regresses to her younger self, which doesn't sit so well with Kit. Here they are out for a walk.
The reservoir looks so small. I haven't walked around it since I was 9 on Halloween. Anders walked me around and around. Made me listen to Paco Peña on his walk and remember those.
No smoking in the park, Julio.
I'll tell Kyle.
Papa was going to take me trick-or-treating when he went into the hospital.
I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
So how do Fiona Shaw and Catherine Waterston work as a mother-daughter relationship in this?
As you would expect, brilliantly. We were just saying off-air, Paul, Catherine is...
Oh, she's a brilliant actor. I don't know why she's not in loads of things.
No, and she first came to our attention in that Fabulous Beasts movie. Is that what it's called? Yeah, and then I thought after that we'd see her a lot more. Pairing her with Fiona Shaw, I think, was brilliant because, again, we're talking about Leo Woodall in Nuremberg and his performance being understated. The thing about great actors is you don't have to, and this could have been so OTT, you know, mothers and daughters and secrets. And what I forgot to mention is that Kit's dying and she's keeping that from her daughter as well. So they could have given the most melodramatic performances, but they're not. They're understated. They're captivating. They're beautiful. And then add to that, the little nerd in me got really excited because Dee Dee Cohn's in this. And people are going, who? Frenchie from Greece and Mrs. Huxtable, Felicia
Rashad. I was going
Rashad.
Who as well, actually, but now I know.
Felicia Rashad is in this too. Yeah. And everybody in this is just brilliant. And it's beautiful. It's set in New York City. You can't help but look at the apartments and go, oh, I want to live there too. But it's not Kardashian. Yes, it's opulent. Yes, it's ridiculous, but not to the level of Kardashian. It's more classy. And I think, look, it's slow. It's not a big blockbuster. It's just a beautiful tale about relationships between women. And I loved that. I really enjoyed it. And it comes in at under 2 hours.
Okay, this is also from the film. It's Charlotte just having moved in with her mother. The mood is still upbeat, but here are the mother and daughter along with their cook. And clearly money is not an object.
Is my favorite daughter here, or did I imagine it? And I thought she ran off to Canada to spite me.
I'm your only daughter, Mother, and you sent me away.
Ooh, stripy salopettes at your age deserves a fine. It's like long hair and old gals. Right, Maria? She looks like a teenager, Mrs. Kidd.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I have a list as long as my arm, what you might call a busy day.
And you know what? I like these.
Well, keep them for Yellowstone.
Don't live in Yellowstone.
You must be freezing your titties off out there in the wilderness.
We bought up a lot more of the land since you last came out.
Well, too bad it's not Park Avenue. You'd be rich.
Overall then, Serena, can you sum this up for us?
Overall, I think we were saying sometimes you just need a nice film, and that's not knocking this film. It's just a nice film that will have you feeling all the emotions as well. I was shocked when I was just like, what's this coming down my face? Oh, that might be some tears. Yeah, yeah. But it's just a gorgeous film that if you want to spend a lovely hour and 45 minutes at the cinema checking out some gorgeous performances and beautiful scenery and costumes and stuff as well, give this a look. I'd give it probably 4 stars.
Okay, and that's Park Avenue. Finally, Paul, we're going to finish up this week.
A nice film.
Yeah, from the heartwarming to the horrific, really. Yeah. The new movie is Keeper. It's by writer and director Osgood Perkins. He's the son of Psycho star Anthony Perkins. Paul, what do we know about his work so far?
Yeah, it's actually a good film. We know that Serena wouldn't have enjoyed it, but it is a good film. He's Long Legs, which some people would be familiar with, Hansel and Gretel. He's very good at mood. He's very good at using sort of shadows and angles to suggest what is not seen. And in fact, there are not that many jumps in this film until quite late on. There's a nice kind of Japanese ghost story influence that I liked in it as well. Unwisely, Tatiana Maslany plays Liz, this woman who decides that it would be a good idea to go to a cabin with her boyfriend. Now, she knows him a while, but he's kind of quiet and shifty looking. He's played by Rossif Sutherland, son of Donald, so also royalty. And he's a doctor and he seems very kind of, you know, plausible. And she's thinking of maybe settling down. Their cabin in the woods is beautiful. Their idyll is interrupted almost straight away by his obnoxious cousin, who has this kind of very tall Russian supermodel type with him, who's very taciturn and seems to be trying to send signals to Liz that all is not well. But so the plot, I can't go into the plot actually, because the plot involves the supernatural and there's no point in trying to describe it. What the film does really, what she's on her own. It's a beautiful, it's not a cabin in the woods, like it's not a horror film cabin. It's like a modernist pine, beautiful cabin with sunken Japanese bath, etc. And so she's having a nice time. He has to go back to the city, as they always do, because there's a medical emergency. And she's in the bath and she keeps feeling like something's behind her. And sometimes it is. There are these shadows around the walls. There's a river that runs beside it, and she keeps having dreams about it and about this woman in 18th century clothes who might have been a witch standing beside it. And all of this will start to make sense at the end. Horror films are always at their weakest when they decide to explain themselves, and there is a kind of last five, 10 minutes where sort of some special effects take over. But overall, Osgood Perkins does a really good job of maintaining this really kind of eerie atmosphere, and it's art house rather than sort of grindhouse. There's not a lot of violence in it. There's some ickiness later on, but it's quite effective, really.
For those people who love their horror movies, is this a quiet bang, or is this a creeping dread sort of film?
It's creeping dread, quiet bang. So there's you do get intimations, but you don't really know, and it cleverly does not explain himself until he absolutely has to.
And what about Tatiana Maslany's performance in this?
She's great because you get, I mean, you know, the stereotype is a woman in a horror film running around waiting to be eaten by something or something like that. She it's much more interesting than that because she has her doubts about him. She's trying to figure out their relationship. She has a rather catty frenemy relationship with a friend on the phone who may be on her side or not. And so we get a rounded sense of who she is and that she may be more resourceful than the common run of Scream Queens.
Okay, stars from you?
4.
Okay, that's Nuremberg, The Running Man, Park Avenue and Keeper are 4 films for this week. Paul Whittington and Serena Bellissimo, thank you very much. That is it for tonight's Arena. Sheila O'Callaghan produced, research was by Paula Shields, our broadcast coordinators, Ollie Hamilton, sound supervision by Tommy O'Sullivan. I'm Rick O'Shea. We are back for a full Arena tomorrow night between 7 and 8. But coming up after the break, commentary from tonight's Portugal-Ireland match from the Aviva Stadium. We'll talk to you tomorrow.